Well, comedy now on Radio 4 with a new series of an old favourite.
Welcome to Just a Minute. Thank you, thank you. Hello. My name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away once more, it is my pleasure to welcome our many listeners in this country, but also throughout the world. But also to welcome to the show this week four talented, exciting, and experienced players of the game who once more are going to use their verbal dexterity and ingenuity as they pit their wits against each other to gain points in just a minute. And they are, in no order of seniority, Paul Merton, Graham Norton, Linda Smith, and Clement Freud. Would you please welcome all four of them? They are going to try and speak on a subject that I give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviating from the subject. Beside me sits Janet Staplehurst, who's going to help me keep the score and blow a whistle when 60 seconds are up. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the new theatre in the wonderful, delightful city of Cardiff, the capital of the great Principality of Wales. And as our listeners can hear, we have before us a passionate, hyped-up Welsh audience to cheer us on our way as we begin the show this week with Clement Freud. Clement, very apt for this time of year. It is the year ahead. Will you tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now?
The year ahead is going to be called the year 2000 and the number between 1 and 3. And I can see the most wonderful things ahead. Cardiff City will be promoted to the First Division. Plymouth Argyle will win the FA Cup. And there will be a new fabric made of the chin fluff of an obscure Mongolian mountain goat, which everyone will try to buy and Vogue will plug like anything. I'm looking forward hugely to the year ahead because I believe that my autobiography, which will be...
Paul Merton's challenge.
Hesitation, yes. after shameless plug.
Yes, sir. And well, he might have hesitated after that. Yes, so Paul, you have a correct challenge. You'll receive a point for that, and you take over the subject, which is the year ahead. There are 13 seconds available starting now.
Well, who knows what's going to happen in the year ahead when we look back at the year just gone? Who would have thought that Prince Charles would have ended up marrying Anne Robinson, the wedding of the century? People were aghast. November the 24th, they together walked down the aisle at Westminster Abbey.
In just a minute, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Paul Merton. We now move into the second round, and this is quite a challenge for me because the subject I've been given is a Welsh subject in the Welsh language. And I should explain to all our listeners, it is actually the longest word in the Welsh language. And it is Clanviart Puth Gwyn Githgu Gerith Gwyn Dropith Clantisilio Go Go Goch.
It went so well. What was that again?
Oh. I don't think I can repeat it again.
No, it was very good.
Right. Linda, we'd like you to take that subject. So can you talk for 60 seconds on Clanviarath Pith Gwyn Gwyth Gogegerith Gwyn Dropith I Clantisilio Gogogoch? Starting now.
Clanvia PG, as it's known to people like myself, who are very intimate with that charming spot, is a delightful place and demonstrates the danger of giving a sign writer too much time and too many dangerous drugs, because they end up with a word that's basically a lot of Scrabble tiles thrown into any order you might care to mention and then painted up as a sign. I do not believe this. This is the most extreme example of Welsh people having a laugh at the English expense. There is no such place, I am quite sure, and if there is, I'm sure people think...
Oh, Clement challenge.
Repetition. sufficient sure.
Yes, you were too sure then, I'm afraid.
I'm too sure.
So, Clement, you have 21 seconds available. The subject is Clan Viereth, Pwyth Gwyngith, Gwgerith, Windrop, Clantisilio, Gogogok. And you start now.
When I learned semaphore, somebody said, where are you? And it was no trouble at all for me to signal that I was in...
Paul, you challenged.
Well, it was semaphore.
It was semaphore, yes.
But it was also hesitation.
It was hesitation. And, Paul, you have a subject. You have 8 seconds. You have this town in Wales, which I don't wish to repeat again. And you start now.
You don't wish to repeat it, but 8 seconds is really not long enough to say it. But here goes. I'm going to take a deep breath and have a really good run at it.
So, Paul Merton was again speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point for doing so, and has increased his lead over all the others at the end of the round. Graham Norton, will you take the next round? The subject is My Nickname. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
I can't help but think that my family, friends, and work colleagues couldn't have tried a little harder and come up with a better nickname than, oh, it's you. It seems not the warmest, cuddliest little nickname they could have. My mother did call me Buster as a child. Luckily, it was the same name as our dog, so she didn't get confused at any time. Some dinners tasted a bit funny, but I was young. I didn't know. Later on, I was nicknamed something else. If only I could think of it now. Oh, it seems to have disappeared from my head. Nickname, perhaps, was the nickname. No, it wasn't that. Give me a minute. I'm sure I will recall it. I remember well in school...
Clement Freud challenge.
He's remembered before.
You did say yes. You remember before. And you went for 50 seconds. Yes.
Don't patronize me.
That's the curse of this game. You go so well and you don't get any points for it. Clement got in with 10 seconds to go on My Nickname, starting now.
My nickname was Lancer Pwyl Swing Goggery Ron Gogogoch. And I answer to that to anyone who tried to...
So, Clement Freud got points in that round, including one for speaking as the whistle went, and is now moved into second place behind Paul Merton. And, Paul, your turn to begin. The subject, eating like a horse. Paul, take the subject, and 60 seconds, as usual, starting now.
Well, eating like a horse, I suppose, is something that you could do. Hay is something that horses like eating, and oats. Bang.
Graham, challenge.
Slight hesitation.
Yes.
I invented a new word there.
Graham, you have eating like a horse, and you have 53 seconds starting now.
My father first taught me to eat like a horse when the lawnmower broke. I would have my hands on the lawn. He would hold my legs and push me, sort of like wheelbarrow, down the garden. The grass was delicious. No complaints there.
Linda, challenge.
Delightful, Graham, but a repetition of grass.
Ah, yeah.
Did I not say lawn?
Oh,
you
no, said lawn.
You did say grass, yes.
Yeah, no, I
did. Linda, we're going to hear from you on the subject. Eating like a horse, 36 seconds starting now.
Eating like a horse means to eat heartily. My Uncle Roy always says, oh, I eat like a bird. Unfortunately, it's a gannet, actually. And it's fooling nobody. Eating like a horse would be quite a dreary diet, and also I don't think I'd like to have that rather rough nose bag over your face. I think that would itch, especially as I have sensitive skin, which requires a lot of skin care, costing about £500.
Clement Freud challenge.
Repetition of skin.
You had too much skin there, I'm afraid. Yes. So, Clement, you've got in with another point to you, of course, and eating like a horse is still the subject, and there are 12 seconds starting now.
Bria Savarin wrote, O children of Eden, who gave it all away for an apple, what might you not have done for a turkey stuffed with sweet chestnut?
Paul Merton challenge.
Well, this isn't eating like a horse, is it?
Coming up to it.
Oh, I see.
Coming up. Well, you went for 11 seconds and you never get to it, so I think in just a minute you do have to establish what you're... You know, the subject on the card much sooner than that, because otherwise... you know... So
Nicholas,
I...
Nicholas, horses do like apples.
But he hadn't got to that point.
No, he mentioned an apple.
He mentioned an apple, but he hadn't related the apple to the horse. So I agree with Paul. So, Paul, you have 1 second on eating like a horse, starting now.
I once entered a horse.
So Paul Merton spoke as the whistle went, gained an extra point, increased his lead over Clement Freud. Linda Smith and Graham Norton are equal in third place, and Linda begins the next round. Linda, the best film ever made. Tell us something about that in just a minute, starting now.
The best film ever made. There are so many to choose from. Could it be Casablanca or Seven Samurai, The Godfather, or possibly the film that followed that and was called The Mafia Boss 2, but not in so many words, of course. It might be Citizen Kane. It might be a film by Fellini.
A Clement Freud challenge.
Two might be's.
It might be. It might be, yes, it might be. Right, 40 seconds, Clement, the best film ever made, starting now.
I think, in my opinion, the best film ever made was 12 Angry Men. It is one which I go and see over and again. A wonderful 12...
Graham, you said... Yes, Graham.
I feel horrible now. A representative of 12.
Yes, he had the 12 again. 29 seconds. You tell us something about the best film ever made, starting now.
I believe the best film ever made was E.T., the extraterrestrial. It is a superb movie. And I remember my disappointment the year it didn't win Best Oscar. No, that went to...
Clement Freud, challenge.
TV it.
What?
No such thing as Best Oscar.
No, in fairness, you're right.
Well, just a minute. Now, let's be fair to Graham here. He didn't win the Oscar for the best film, but you could say that is the best Oscar to win, couldn't you? And you have 15 seconds to continue on the best film ever made, starting now.
The best film ever made was, without doubt, Gandhi. Oh, the costume.
Paul Merton challenge.
Well, that's the deviation.
Why?
Because he said it was E.T.
He changed his mind.
No, I think that's a fair challenge. Paul, you have it.
It's a world turned upside down.
You just said the best film ever made was E.T. Yeah.
I was an idiot. What was I talking about? It's childish, sentimental...
But you did not establish...
Gandhi. Now, there's a hard-hitting political film.
Right. You didn't say, I've changed my mind, and in my opinion, it is now the best film ever made. You made the statement, and now you contradict the statement. So, 12 seconds, the best film ever made, starting now.
Undoubtedly, the best film ever made is Gandhi meets E.T.
Graham Norton Judge.
It went off in my hand.
In other words, your buzzer accidentally, your finger slipped on the buzzer. I think we should establish that. So you don't have an actual challenge.
No.
Paul was interrupted. He gets a point. He gets 8 seconds. The best film ever made, starting now.
It is very difficult to decide what you think is the best film ever made. Perhaps the question should be, what is your favourite film? Undoubtedly...
So, Paul Merton... Speaking as the whistle went, gained an extra point. He's now increased his lead ahead of Graham Norton. In fact, he's got 13, Graham's got 7, then there's Clement with 6, and Linda's got a few behind them. And,
What's a few behind 6?
4, 5, whichever you want. Graham,
yes.
It's your turn to begin. The subject is relatives. Tell us something about relatives, starting now.
Relatives are God's way of giving you flatmates. It's a random thing, really, because I've advertised for people to live with. I don't think I'd have accepted my mother and father. They're kind of old. They don't stay up very late. And, oh, they complain about the noise. Mind you, the old woman, she's good at the cleaning. My father also helps in the garden. That was good, too. Oh, if I said good twice, baby, who cares?
Don't draw attention to it. Sometimes they're generous. Paul, you got in first. And there are 34 seconds on relatives, starting now.
As Graham says, it's very impossible to choose your own relatives, whereas friends are somebody that you can say, yes, I like you, I shall be friendly with you, and...
Linda.
I was trying to turn you into another word.
So Linda got in first, then. We call that hesitation, Linda, and you have 23 seconds on relatives, starting now.
I mainly see my relatives at family celebrations, such as funerals, which is very similar to Christmas without the paper hats. They're very similarly a they're tired and sat around like crows on a fence and generally reducing us all to a state of mild depression that involves just over-the-counter drugs, nothing too serious. And I managed to endure it because I know...
So Linda was speaking as a whistle wender. With other points in that round, she has leapt forward. She's still in fourth place, but she's only 1 point behind Clement Freud, only 2 points behind Graham Norton, and only 5 points behind Anita Paul Merton. And Paul, it's your turn to begin. Here's a good subject. Onomatopoeia. Yes.
Ooh, there's posh.
Yes. Talk about onomatopoeia in this game, if you can, starting now.
It means words that sound like the noise they describe, such as buzz, hiss, meow, zoological gardens. These are all examples of onomatopoeic words. It's one of...
Clement Freud, challenge.
Repetition of words.
Yes, that's right, you did say
yes,
words.
Yes, I did.
You did, yes. 46 seconds, Clement. Tell us something about onomatopoeia, starting now.
Onomatopoeia is a small town in Anglesey, which hardly anyone is able to pronounce. You go to the station, and on the platform there's this sign, onomatopoeia.
Paul Challenge.
Repetition of go.
I'm glad you didn't challenge for anything else, because I don't know what I'd interpret it as. Anyway, 28 seconds, Paul. You have onomatopoeia back with you, starting now.
I don't know if anybody finds onomatopoeia particularly useful in this day and age. Perhaps in the 19th century, people were wandering around London and other major cities in this marvellous British Isles of ours, using onomatopoeia at every conceivable juncture. Perhaps people walking in and out of shops would say...
Graham Norton, challenge.
I felt like I was getting on a bus there. It was going, wasn't it? Room on top. What was I going to say? Oh, I've forgotten now. Oh, walking. Repetition of walking.
Yes, there was walking. Yes. Right. So, Graham, well, listen. You've got him with 8 seconds to go on onomatopoeia, starting now.
Until tonight, I always thought onomatopoeia was Welsh for tomato. But I know so much more than that.
So Graham Norton, with points in that round, including one for speaking as the whistle went, has leapt forward. He's now just behind our leader, Paul Merton, and then it's Clement Freud and Linda Smith. And Clement, your turn to begin. The subject is the peach. Tell us something about the peach in just a minute, starting now.
The peach is a fruit generally described as luscious, and if you go to Venice, Milan or Rome, Harry's Bar serves Bellinis, which are the most sensational cocktails made of white peaches liquidized, mixed with brandy and champagne. I cannot recommend this peach confection enough. It is peachy to the extreme. Peaches jump out at you. Your taste buds are taken over by the taste of peach. A great, enormous, wonderful pink and white and yellow and...
Was there a slight hesitation there?
A slight one, but not enough to
not
be...
Not enough.
Not enough, I don't think. I mean, he was struggling a little, but, Clement, you had the benefit of the drought. You still have the benefit of the drought. And you have 21 seconds on the peach, starting now.
If you find women, sheep or goats attractive, you might say that is a peach, meaning beautiful, lovely, enticing, embraceable, peach-like. I can't recommend enough.
Graham Norton, challenge.
Maybe not. Would you recommend?
Yes, he had recommend. He was recommending the Bellinis earlier on.
Yes.
And
recommend and recommending, but there we are.
No.
Oh. I'm not sure you're right, Clement, but I.
And I'm sure you're wrong, Nicholas.
It was also a repetition of white.
Absolutely, because we're talking about the white peaches too.
There
is a repetition. 5 seconds for you, Graham, on the peach, starting now.
An odd term of endearment, the peach. Are you saying you have a problem with facial hair and a heart like a stone?
Mm. So Graham Norton was speaking on the pitch as the whistle went and gained an extra point. He's now only 2 points behind Paul Merton, our leader, and just ahead of the other two. And Linda, your turn to begin. The subject, cold feet. Tell us something about cold feet in just a minute, starting now.
Cold feet is an expression that tends to mean going off an idea. For example, if I were asked to introduce Anne Robinson at an iSteadford, I think I would very rapidly get cold feet. Sometimes you can have cold feet because you are just cold. For example, if you're on a holiday in Snowdonia in August, you may find that your feet and the rest of you are very cold indeed, and also quite damp because it will be raining constantly, probably about 29 hours a day, if that's possible, with a kind of intensity that you wouldn't think mere moisture could have. It has a most extraordinarily penetrating quality, I find, so your feet are definitely cold. If your feet are cold and the rest of you is very cold, then you may well be dead. This is a serious matter which you should attend to immediately. And
oh, Linda. Linda, there must be something about the Welsh that inspires you, because you get a point for speaking as a whistle wind, you get a bonus point for not being interrupted. I hate to have to tell you this, but you're still in fourth place. No, this is what's so unfair about this game, and I hate it, because her contribution's so magnificent. But there we are. Graham Norton, it's your turn to begin. The subject is my previous incarnation. Will you tell us something about that in this, that subject in this game, starting now?
My previous incarnation was as my Aunt Irene, which was fine before I was born. But when we were both alive at the same time, it was hell. Particularly because I was quite small and fit none of her clothes. People began to notice. I could never be in the same room. Sometimes my mother would catch me in a cot, dressed as Aunt Irene. She... Oh.
Oh, Janice.
An unfortunate repetition of Aunt Irene.
Yes, Aunt Irene came in a bit too much. And, Paul, you've got in with 42 seconds on my previous incarnation, starting now.
My previous incarnation was undoubtedly something spectacular in the Roman Empire or maybe in Egypt. It always seems to be that people who believe in reincarnation do see themselves as Cleopatra's handmaiden or plumber to Julius Caesar. Nobody says, well, I was a farmer in East Anglia in the 14th century reeking of cow dung and I died at the age of 36, because that's not very romantic. And maybe that's the feeling that we want to get back to, that there's something intrinsically romantic.
Clement Freud, challenge. Yes, we interpret that as hesitation. 13 seconds, Clement. Tell us something about my previous reincarnation, starting now.
In my previous reincarnation, I didn't write an autobiography.
Paul Merton, challenge.
So why break the habit?
A bonus point for the comment, but have you any challenge? Well, you let him off the hook there, because he did hesitate, actually. So he got a point for his interruption, which was very nice. Clement gets a point for being interrupted. Keeps the subject, my previous incarnation, starting now.
I was, in fact, an East Anglian farmer, reeking of cow dung.
Right, Clement Freud speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point, and he has moved forward. He's now 1 point behind Graham Norton, and Graham Norton is 4 points behind Paul Merton, who's in the lead, and Linda Smith is rushing up the rear, and... and we're moving into the last round. That's why I gave you such a precise comments on the state of play, because this is the last subject, and it's a very apt last subject for this show coming from Cardiff. It is the Welsh language. And, Paul, it's your turn to begin. Tell us something about the Welsh language in 60 seconds, starting now.
I'm not very good with languages. I still struggle with English at times. I can't make it do what I want it. And Welsh is very impossible to understand, isn't it, if you don't have any learning or schooling in the subject. It doesn't make sense. The words don't bear any pronunciation similarity to what I'm... I told you about I was no good at English, didn't I?
Well, this was Welsh we were asking you to talk about. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Linda, you challenge first.
Yeah, a deviation from two languages there.
Yeah, right, yeah. I can be pig ignorant in any language you like.
42 seconds available, Linda, for you. The Welsh language, starting now.
The Welsh language has some omissions in its words. There are some concepts that do not have a thing to denote them.
Graham challenged.
It seemed like a hesitation.
It was a hesitation. Yes. Right, oh. Graham. So you tell us something about the Welsh language in 34 seconds, starting now.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I'm sitting here in the fastest growing capital city in Europe. But I'm very drawn to the Welsh language. You know, I speak a little. I think if I try, I can say industrial estate in...
Linda, you challenge.
Oh, it's about half a dozen eyes.
It is the Welsh language.
So you're having him for repeating I. Well, I must.
No, fine. I don't want to make a big thing out of it.
No, it's fine.
But I mean, I have to be fair within the rules of just a minute. He did repeat I. And within the rules of just a minute, that's repetition. So you have the Welsh language. You have 20 seconds starting now.
When you listen to people using the Welsh language, quite often they'll come across a concept that doesn't have a word in Welsh. For example, English bastards. I've noticed when you're sitting in a pub somewhere, I can't help feeling with the complexity and difficulty of the Welsh language that possibly it is entirely fictitious.
So, Linda Smith, speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point and has surged forward at the end of that final round. She got points as well, and she finished up just in fourth place, only 1 point behind her. No, but her contribution is so deeply appreciated. Only 1 point behind Clement Freud, and he was only 2 points behind Graham Norton. And they're all very, very close, aren't they? And he was only 2 points behind our leader, Paul Merton. So we say, Paul, you are the winner this week. So it only remains for me to say thank you to our four intrepid and stalwart players of the game, Paul Merton, Graham Norton, Linda Smith, and Clement Freud. I also thank Janet Staplehurst for helping with the score and blowing her whistle so delicately. And also we are grateful to our producer-director, that is Claire Jones. We are deeply indebted to the creator of this game, Ian Messiter, and we are more than indebted to this lovely audience here at the New Theatre in Cardiff who cheered us on our way with Welsh passion and aplomb. From them... From our audience, from our panel, and from me, Nicholas Parsons, thank you for tuning in. Be with us the next time we play Just a Minute. Until then, from all of us here, goodbye.
Next week, Just a Minute comes from Broadcasting House, where the panellists are Paul Merton, Clement Freud, Lisa Tarbuck, and Stephen Fry.